of hours here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight's program is JT Noah. Hopefully everybody's staying safe out on the roads right now. Slick one, man. I mean, it's been raining off and on all day. Apparently, we're going to get a strange set of weather here over the next couple of days. We've got rain, we've got thunderstorms, possibly snow or ice, tornadoes could be in the mix. Just a typical March in the Midwest, I suppose, by all intents and purposes, right?
Yeah, I mean, we think it's over, and then it's like, hey, guess what? It was a little joke. Here's more.
Yeah, we had like that first false spring, and now we're kind of in the midst of a second one. And let's just throw snow, ice, and tornadoes in.
Blizzard
right?
warnings. Let's just throw it all. You know, wait, we're gonna go out with a bing this year. You know? Who pissed Mother Nature off? Is a real question.
I'm curious as well. Somebody definitely rubbed Mother Nature the wrong way. That's for sure. But we got a lot of sports to talk about here over the next 3 hours on the program. Coming up at 6:30, Chris Unocero, who is a producer, he's also a host here at 96.5 The Fan. He and Jay Binkley do a lot of NFL draft coverage. These guys love to get down into the details of highlight tapes and scouting reports and determine who some of the big prospects are each and every year come NFL draft time. So I'm sure Chris is going to have a lot of good conversation for us at 6:30, talking about the NFL Combine. Who are some of the guys that stood out to him, and where could he possibly see the Chiefs going here as we approach the April timeframe for the NFL draft? Then coming up at 7:15, talking Kansas City Chiefs, what the latest is with them and what it could mean for the remainder of our season here. Jordan Foote will be joining us as well. So again, Chris Unocero at 6:30, and we'll have Jordan Foote coming up at 7:15. Let's kick off the program here tonight with the official word that the Kansas City Chiefs have in fact put Trey Smith on the franchise tag, and that the Bengals have hopefully talked about, or that the Bengals have certainly already locked in T. Higgins, which is kind of an interesting storyline. So this is the fewest number of players. Those are the only two guys that were put on the franchise tag among the 32 teams still remaining in this league. It's the fewest tags used by the league since 2006. Trey Smith of the Chiefs, T. Higgins for the Bengals. So the lowest amount in 19 years. In 2006, only one team used the tag, and that was Nate Clements was picked up by the Bills on the franchise tag. It's the only time it was used that year. For comparison, last season, 8 guys were put on the franchise tag. Only 2 of them this year. And the indication is that for both of these guys, it is to allow for a long-term extension to be put on the books sooner rather than later. Will that happen? I don't know, because that's what everybody uses the franchise tag for, right? It's to just give them another year or another few months of conversation in order to try to get something long-term done. I think that that is definitely going to be the case with Trey Smith and the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm a little bit less confident when it comes to T. Higgins and the Bengals, just because the Bengals have to prove it to me. I mean, they've never been an organization that has done anything of the sort in paying their upper echelon players big time money for big time years, right? I mean, they've already got Joe Burrow for the long haul. They are talking about making Ja'Marr Chase the highest paid non-quarterback ever. So you're going to pay T. Higgins a $25 to $30 million a year, 4 or 5 year deal. You're going to pay Trey Hendrickson $20 to $25 million plus for a 4 or 5 year deal. Man, I just don't see it. I really just don't see that's going to be the case here. I'm not buying it by any stretch of the imagination. I think that Trey Smith will be on a multi-year deal. So now with the franchise tag deadline was at 3:00 Central Time today. Now, the Chiefs and the Bengals have until July 15th to sign those players to a multi-year extension, multi-year contracts. Otherwise, they can play on the tag, but the Chiefs will be paying Trey Smith you know, $23.5 million, and the Bengals will pay T. Higgins about $26.5 million to play on next year's squad, and then they will become free agents again. I don't know if there's a rule in the NFL for how many times a player can be franchise tagged, but for T. Higgins, this is the second year in a row that he has been put on the franchise tag. Of the last eight players that has happened to, seven of the eight actually came to an agreement on a multi-year deal with the team that they are currently a part of. The only one that hasn't, I believe, was Brandon Scherff with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's the only guy who was on the tag back-to-back years and then didn't sign a long-term extension with the team that had drafted them. So until the tag is accepted, both of these players are not currently under contract and in turn have no obligation to report for mandatory minicamp or training camp. That is the way that this sits as of right now. They can show up just before the season starts and make the full extent of what they are due via the franchise tag. So for T. Higgins or Trey Smith, if a long-term agreement cannot be picked up by July 15th, they are not obligated to show up until week one of the season. They don't have to show up for training camp or mini camp or the preseason. None of it. They can show up if the Chiefs' first game next year is a September 1st matchup, for example. They can just show up on August 31st and be like, okay, let's go. Let's get after it. Do I think that's going to happen? No. Especially in the case of Trey Smith, because I think he's got a pretty strong relationship with the organization, and they've won. They've won quite a bit. Now, there is also the possibility that a tag could be removed. That hasn't happened since 2016. The Panthers took the tag off of Josh Norman, and so there is some precedent for it, but I think it's fairly unlikely. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line just said they can't be tagged a third time. Yeah. I figured that was the case, but I didn't know for certain one way or the other. I'm sensing a lot of confusion here. Somebody in the text line just said, hopefully y'all talk about Reed not coming back. So sad. I'm assuming this is in reference to Justin Reed, not Andy Reed. I haven't heard anything. Have you? Have you heard anything, JT, about Justin Reed?
I saw something. It was Nate Taylor was saying on one of the podcasts that it seems unlikely that Justin Reed will re-sign with the Chiefs or the Chiefs will pursue, but that there's no confirmation on it.
Right. Yeah, and it's not 100% sure, but this is something that we all kind of figured. I mean, it just makes sense. I talked about this yesterday. I think Jaden Hicks can be your starting strong safety next year. I think that he proved that throughout the course of the season. Justin Reed, I think that money can be spent elsewhere. And applaud Justin Reed for his tenure with the Chiefs. He was great, won a couple of Super Bowls. He was absolutely worth the investment. But when you look at the rest of the organization, Chiefs have to figure out what they're going to do at left tackle. Chiefs have to figure out the running back position. I think they're definitely going to have to figure out linebacker because I don't think Nick Bolton's going to be back. You need added pieces on your defensive line, especially at defensive tackle and potentially at defensive end if you can't come to an agreement with maybe a Charles Omenihu or a Turk Wharton. If those guys end up walking in free agency, then defensive line has got to be a focus. And I think cornerback wouldn't hurt them either. So I'm not surprised that that's the news that we're getting, is that Justin Reed is unlikely to be coming back, because I just don't think it is. I don't think it's entirely necessary to have Justin Reed back when you've got somebody like, you know, Jaden Hicks there. And then, you know, with Reed leaving, Jaden Hicks slides into the starting strong safety spot. And then Shamari Connor becomes a depth piece at safety, which I think is his most natural position. He was forced to play some slot corner this year, and I just don't think that was the right fit for him. So he will be headed back to that safety spot to kind of be a depth guy or maybe an inside the box safety on certain sets, nickels and dime coverages and those sorts of things, for instead of Jaden Hicks being that guy like he was last year, it just makes the most sense for this Chiefs team to let Justin Reed walk and use the money that he would have made and put it into some other positions of need.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. The only reason you would keep Reed is if you didn't trust Cook or Chimani Connor back there. And obviously, I think Spags does trust those two or even three guys back there that they can let Reed walk. Reed did, I thought, a phenomenal job at the position coming in for Tyrann Mathieu, where people also were on the wanting him to go. And so I think safety is like almost safety and linebacker to me is like the running back position on the offense, where you don't see many teams give a second contract to the same player to play that position.
No question. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line said, I might be late on this, but is that guy's name that's coming up Chris 10? Technically, Chris Unocero will be joining us at 6:30. He's a producer here at 96.5. He also is a host of the Character Concerns podcast here through 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app. Does a lot of coverage for the NFL draft. He really gets into the details of the draft every single year. So, yes, he'll be joining us at 6:30. And I guess, technically, Unocero in Spanish does mean 10. So, you're not entirely wrong. Somebody else in the text line, another 816, says Reed got so much better each year with Spags and the physicality was amazing. He made so many smart plays this season stopping those wide receiver screens. Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I'm not saying that Reed doesn't deserve an extension, because I think if you can get it done, fine. I don't think it's going to happen, because the Chiefs have other needs. They got other stuff they got to get figured out. And I think Jaden Hicks is good enough to slide in and be that starting strong safety that the need for Justin Reed doesn't exist in the same way that it did a year or two ago for this Chiefs team. And you've got other stuff you got to get figured out, right? You can use some of that money that you might have given Justin Reed to re-sign Charles Aminihu. And that way you've got Aminihu on one side of the D-line to pair with George Karloftis, and that makes some sense. You can try to find a depth piece at corner in free agency, for example. I know Darius Slay got cut by the Eagles yesterday. I think it's an intriguing option, because if you get Darius Slay, he and Jalen Watson can play on the outside. Trent McDuffie goes right back to being a slot corner again, which I feel like is his most natural position. And again, we'll continue to talk more and more about this as the show goes along. We'll certainly talk about it with Jordan Foote coming up here at about 7:15 tonight. But when we come back, I want to get into some big storylines in the NFL today. A big extension, a big-time player is cut, and a player traded away to another organization. We'll talk about all that on the other side of the break here. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here alongside JT Noah right here on 96.5 The Fan. This is a good song choice, JT, but I need you to remove the music very quickly here. I have some bad news. I did not know about this prior to the show starting, but I just saw it pop up on my Twitter feed about 20 minutes ago. Or about 5 minutes ago, actually. It posted 20 minutes ago. From Tony Reale. If you're not familiar with who Tony Reale is, he was the host of Around the Horn. So I just saw his tweet. It said, thank you guys, I'm overwhelmed, but I'll try to give FaceTime to you all. All I ever wanted was for you to know that I care. And I'm like, what does that mean? So I just Googled Around the Horn, and I was hit with a litter of stories, including this headline from NBC. ESPN's Around the Horn canceled after 23 years. No. The sports debate show will air its final episode on May 23rd, according to a report from ESPN on Tuesday. Why? I mean, I know why. Obviously, the ratings aren't as good as they used to be. The pretty clear-cut answer for this. But, I mean, for me, man, and I don't know, but I mean, JT, you're not that much younger than me, are you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because I'm 27, so...
Okay, I'm 24.
When I was 4 when this program began airing in 2002, I grew up with Around the Horn, right? I grew up as a kid in elementary school and even into middle school Once you got into junior high and high school, I always had sports. You know, I had practice after school, so I couldn't. But in elementary school and in middle school, school would get out at 3 o'clock, right? Hop on the bus. Bus will drive you home. I would usually get back to my house at 3:20, 3:30. TV goes on, right? I watched the last half hour of, and I can never remember. It's been so long now. I can never remember was, and somebody tell me in the text line, 913-586-7965, because I know that Pardon the Interruption, right, PTI and Around the Horn aired back to back, but I can never remember which aired first. So
I thought it was always PTI.
I thought PTI always led.
Because then it would go to SportsCenter right after Around the Horn.
Right, that's what I thought too, was that Pardon the Interruption would air from 3 to 4, and so I'd catch about the last half hour of PTI with Wilbon, you know, and Kornheiser, and then from 4 to 5, you're watching Around the Horn, and then at 5 o'clock, that's the first SportsCenter of the night. And Carrington, I saw his tweet about it earlier today as well. He was saying the same thing, that lead into SportsCenter at 5 o'clock. It inspired an entire generation here. And I was that kid, man, just obsessed with ESPN when I was little, where like from the moment I got, dude, I would watch the same episode of SportsCenter for 6 hours. Like I would watch SportsCenter from 9 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. Didn't matter. It was the same highlights. It was the same conversations. Bam.
And it's funny how much you would miss in it. You'd be like, oh my God, I didn't remember that on the last episode. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was so bought into everything that SportsCenter had going on, right? Whether it was John Anderson or Steve Levy, you know, SVP and Stuart Scott. Dynamic duo that was hosting SportsCenter together. And like even the, like when they would do the hockey stuff, and admittedly, I'm not a hockey guy. I don't know much about the sport. I've never actually been to a hockey game. Never have.
Not I'd even like a Mavericks game?
No, never been to a Mavericks game. At some point I should, right? It's maybe the only sport that I've never actually like taken in person. I've been to football games, baseball games, basketball games. I've been to soccer games, softball games, right? But I've never been to a hockey game. It was, I mean, such an insane era. And you watch SportsCenter now, and maybe it's just because we're older, and everybody always looks at their childhood with, like, the rose-colored glasses that we all, you know, that cliche we always hear about, that, like, you think everything was so much better when you were a kid versus the way it is now. I thought SportsCenter when we were younger was phenomenal, and it's just not quite the same anymore as it used to be.
It doesn't help like when you have Twitter, so you see all the highlights already before you even get to the SportsCenter. But my parents always thought I was the weird kid. I would get up an hour or two before I was supposed to so I could make sure I got the last episode in of SportsCenter. My parents were like, what are you doing up? I've got to watch the top 10 plays. I've got to watch.
Dude, you got to get the SC top 10 in, man. It has to happen. Somebody in the text line said it was time for Around the Horn to go, to be honest. Yeah, it probably was. I will admit, I don't think I've watched an episode of Around the Horn since college, maybe. Like, even before that. Like I said, like, once you got into junior high and high school, like, I always had practice after school, right? Whether it was football practice or baseball practice or football, whatever it was, you always had practice from, like, 3 to 5. And so you'd get home, and it already aired. SportsCenter's on now. And then, you know, I got into college and you get busy with the hustle and bustle of being a college student and whatnot. And you get out of college and now I have a job, right? And it's hard for me. And I don't know if you're the same way, JT, but like, man, my intake of sports media has shifted dramatically since I left college and got into sports media as a career path, like as an industry. It's like, I cover sports and I talk about sports for a living. So like, do I want to watch other people cover sports and talk about sports in my spare time? So I've sort of reined in or scaled back the amount of like sports media that I'm taking in. I've watched PTI still pretty regularly because I love Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon and I love what they bring to the table. It's been a very, very long time since I had seen an episode of Around the Horn. So yeah, I'm not surprised to see that it's
most
going.
Most of the time when I'm at the gym, Around the Horn is on. So it'll be like on right there. kind of like when you're on the treadmill or whatever you're doing, and you're like, oh, okay, it's on, but you're listening to music, so you're kind of like peeking up, oh, what's their topics and all that. But my favorite memory about old SportsCenter was when you had the highlight side where it would go down. You're like, uh-oh, the highlight I want is, oh, four away. I got to get to it. Mom, we can't leave just yet. We got like 5 minutes. Let me get to my highlight. I've been waiting for it.
Like, they basically had the show sheet on screen that you could follow as the show went along. And it's like, okay, they're going to bring on somebody to talk about hockey. Do I really want to hear that tonight? That's when I can go grab something out of the kitchen to eat or whatever before I come back. Because, hey, right after the hockey stuff, that's when they're going to do SC Top 10. And I cannot miss the top 10 plays of the day. It's crazy. Like, you look at, they put a list together of some of like the panelists, like the regular panelists that were on. J.A. Adonde was on there a ton. Kevin Blackstone was one that I remember watching over and over again. Bob Ryan was one of my favorites because he was a Boston area beat writer, wrote for the Boston Globe, I believe, for years. And I grew up a Boston sports fan for weird reasons. My dad used to play old NBA live video games, and he always played with the Celtics. And so because of that, I became a Celtics fan. So I always loved having him on because he would talk about the Celtics and the Red Sox and things like that before I, you know, grew up and became a Royals fan because they're from the area. I still root for the Celtics because there's no NBA team in Kansas City. And until there is, I got nobody to root for that makes any sort of geographical sense.
Hey, at least they have a Missouri, quote unquote, guy on their team, Jason Tatum. So
that's fair. That's fair. I played AAU against Jason Tatum. Oh. We're the same age. I'm like a week older than him.
Mm. Wow.
Which hurts your soul.
How'd that go?
It didn't go well. It went about how you'd expect. Yeah, kind of right? Figured. Yeah. I mean, I definitely wasn't guarding him. I was in eighth grade, or we were in eighth grade. And we played him in a tournament in like Topeka or something like that. It was over on the Kansas side. And I mean, we got worked, man. I can't remember. And I cannot remember for the life of me what team he played for at a St. Louis. I think they're Bradley Beal Elite technically now, but they weren't at the time. And yeah, we got dogged, dude. And like, we would play against MoCan every once in a while too. And Michael Porter Jr. played up on their team, and he was when I was an eighth grader and he was a seventh grader, and they worked us, man. It was unreal.
That sounds like so much fun. Like, oh, hey, who are you guys playing today? Oh, Michael Porter. Whoa. Oh, buddy. Michael Porter Jr. Oh, yeah. And yep. Jason Tatum's the next game. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
There was a lot of that, dude. And like, Trey Young played on MoCan too. So I can remember playing against him. Okai Agbaji was a couple years younger than I was, or Ochai Agbaji. And so we never played against him, but I got a chance to watch him play. I remember I played in a tournament in high school against Bull Bull.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. They showed up. They had only five players. They did not have a coach, right? And they just weren't taking it too seriously. This was the summer before my senior year. And so, like, they weren't taking it all that seriously. We had, like, seven or eight guys, and a couple of our dads were coaching. And we got up, like, 20 in the game. And one of my buddies on our team, because it was just like a group of us from my small little hometown of Lawson. It's like 2,500, you know, people in the home, in the town. It's like eight of us, right? Nobody taller than maybe 6'3 or 6'4. And he's playing with a bunch of his buddies from Bishop Miege. So these are like nationally ranked players. And they were shooting from half court, and they weren't taking it all that serious. And we were actually shooting it pretty well. We got up like 20. And one of them said something to one of my buddies, and my buddy said, scoreboard. They outscored us 41-4 in the last like 8 minutes of the second half. They ended up beating us by like 15. Mm. So it was like,
yeah.
Why couldn't you just kept your mouth shut?
Right. My senior year, we had to do what was called a senior project at my high school. So you have to do something that you wanted to do with your career. Mm. Well, I did a job shadow for Spectrum Sports, and I went to this game. My dad's like, oh, why is it so big? I go, Dad, these are some players. It was Northwest. Shawnee Mission Northwest, but Blue Valley Northwest versus Bishop Miege. And Christian Brown was there. And my dad's like, how tall is that dude? I go, I think I said it was 6'8". He goes, he's in high school. I go, yeah. And he's going D1. He goes, well, I would hope.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there were some pretty ridiculous, and like I called games down in Springfield, Link Academy.
Link Academy
as a program down there, and they played a game against Sunrise Christian one time down in Springfield. Whew, I mean, this area has got really, really spectacular high school basketball.
Yeah, and
I mean, you'd be
Gates
surprised.
Has taken advantage of Link Academy. He's got a couple players mm-hmm. now on his team, and he's, I know, recruited a couple for next year. So.
Yeah, no question about it. But, yeah, I mean, end of an era. Around the horn. Around the horn gets, bam. 913-586-7965. Somebody said PTI let off at 3 o'clock, which is what I thought. Somebody else in the text line at 918 says the side ribbon on Old Sports Center was iconic. It should still be the same way. RIP around the horn. Honestly, I always enjoyed the people, but yeah, they kind of failed to keep it fresh. Love Woody Page, but maybe they shouldn't have. Yeah, that shouldn't have been his retirement plan. Yeah, man. Woody Page, Bill Plaschke was one that was on there a lot. Jackie McMullen, which is another Boston area person. Tim Kalishaw. Mina was on there for a while. Jamel Hill, I think, was a regular contributor and panelist for a while there. Bomani Jones was another really good one. It was fun to watch, but it's not surprising to see that it's finally come to an end. ESPN says now that a 30-minute edition of SportsCenter will air weekdays during the summer at 5 p.m. Eastern time in its place. So I'm guessing they'll just air SportsCenter at 4 to 4:30 and then again from 4:30 to 5. And then the new SportsCenter will run starting at 5 o'clock. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. All right. I know I was going to talk about the NFL, but I saw that during the break, and I was like, I got to talk about Around the Horn, because it's like a small piece of your childhood just died, especially those of us who are just weirdos when it comes to sports as a whole, and watched it almost every day, man. I watched so many episodes of Around the Horn, and I'm not going to be able to do that anymore, and it's a sad state of affairs. Almost 5,000 episodes.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Right now, they've produced more than 4,900, and by the time you reach that May 23rd deadline, it will be up over 4,950, so nearly 5,000 total episodes of the show before it's all said and done.
I wonder who's going to be the guest for that last episode. They got to bring some OGs, you would think.
Got to bring everybody back. Bring every contributor that you've ever had on the program back to say a piece, to bring them on for a segment or whatever you want to do. I don't know. It's probably too many for an hour show, but I wouldn't be disappointed if they gave it a shot. I'll be tuned in May 23rd. I want to take that last one in for sure. 913-586-7965. We'll get back to some opinion and discussion a little bit later on. But coming up, we're going to talk NFL draft and NFL combine with Chris Unocero. That is coming up here on the other side of the break. You're listening to After Hours with Logan Weber and JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan. Talked about the end of an era last segment. ESPN announcing today that after 23 years, Around the Horn will be coming to a close on May 23rd. A sad state of affairs for those of us who grew up watching Around the Horn on a day-by-day basis. Somebody in the text line just informed me, and I actually Googled it during the break. Around the Horn aired first. So it aired from 4 to 4:30, and then it was PTI from 4:30 to 5, and then they rolled into... rolled into SportsCenter at 5 o'clock. So we'll move on from that subject. I've got on the line with us right now Chris Unocero. He is a producer of ours here on 96.5 The Fan. He's also a host of the Character Concerns podcast. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, whatever, right through or through the Odyssey app that we have here at our stations here at 96.5 The Fan. Chris is on with us now to talk a little NFL draft because of the combine that we saw over the weekend. But Chris, first things first, man. What do you make of the announcement that Around the Horn is coming to an end here? Did you grow up watching the show just like we did?
Yeah, I grew up watching it. Yeah, I was actually going to correct you because, yeah, PTI came on after Around the Horn back in the day. And then you had SportsCenter at 5 o'clock. So, yeah, I grew up watching it a lot. But, yeah, I'm a big fan of the show. It kind of sucks to kind of see ESPN distance themselves away from journalism, because that's kind of been their bread and butter. But, you know, I mean, I guess ratings is probably their biggest motivation, and hopefully they replace it with something that is actually good, and hopefully it's not just 30 more minutes of SportsCenter.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're doing, at least for the time being, it sounds like. They're going to do a half-hour SportsCenter at some point in that 4 o'clock hour. But what they do after that, I think, is what we're all going to have to wait around and see. But that's not why we've got you on. We've got you on to talk a little bit about the NFL draft and the combine. And I guess first things first, just give me some of your immediate reactions to the results of the drills and the field work that we saw over the course of the combine last weekend. Who are some of the more standout performers, in your opinion, guys that really helped their stock that maybe weren't being talked about enough leading up to what took place in Indianapolis?
First off, I thought it was a really good defensive line day on Thursday. Like that, that's probably like the star. Like that, and running backs are like the two position groups that are probably the stars of this draft class in general. And yeah, I mean, I thought there were a lot of guys that I thought looked really interesting there. I mean, one guy I've talked about a lot here recently is Joshua Farmer, the defensive tackle from Florida State. He didn't put like a crazy RAS number out there. It was like in the mid sevens or so. But like one of the things you notice when you watch him on film and you watch him in those workouts is like he's got a crazy high motor. Like he works. I mean, that's one of the things like George Karloftis had when he was coming out of Purdue, is that he had this crazy high motor and he put in a lot of effort in every single play. And you see it paid off. It's paid off with him in his 3 years with the Chiefs. It's the same thing with Joshua Farmer. The guy tries really, really hard. And you could see that in those drills on Thursday night. Derek Harmon from Oregon, that guy looked really good, really athletic. You know, he's a defensive tackle, and he just looked really strong at being able to not only, you know, showcase his strength, but showcase his ability to kind of turn the corner. And, you know, I thought he looked really good. I thought Deion Walker from Kentucky looked really good. And then on Saturday, you had quarterbacks, receivers, running backs. And I thought for running backs, I mean, Amari and Hampton, he's my favorite running back from this class, even over Ashton Gentry, just because he's got the size combo that you really like. And then I really like DJ Giddens from Kansas State. I thought he may have been the biggest winner from Saturday for running backs, because that's a guy that you didn't hear a whole lot about in the lead up to the draft and the lead up to the combine, but you saw his size. You know, he's about 6'2", 212, good size on him, ran a sub 4.5 40, and just, he looked really strong when he was running through his drills and whatnot. So I was really impressed by Giddens. And, you know, for receivers, I mean, I'll say this, Matthew Golden definitely made himself some money, locked himself into the first round, I think, going with that 4.29 40, which was faster than his teammate, Isaiah Bond, who was talking about beating Xavier Worthy's 40 record. And he only ran a 4.4. So I think there was a lot of interesting players that made themselves some money, but mainly at defensive line, running back, and wide receiver.
And I know that everybody is so focused with this Chiefs team when it comes to the tackle position, right? A lot of people believe that the Chiefs should go that route in round one, whether it be at pick number 31 or if they trade up into this draft. What did you make of the performance along the offensive line with guys like Armon Membo or Josh Connerly from Oregon, who had some pretty good days?
So, the offensive line day for the combine is not quite as important as others, because for them, they're not able to really like showcase the technique as much. So really the big things you're looking for are the measurements and just the overall like basic athleticism, like, you know, the vertical, you kind of get a feel for how athletic someone is and whatnot. But I mean, the biggest thing for those guys was going to be arm length. That's your biggest thing that you're going to showcase at the combine, how long your arms are. And it wasn't great. It was funny because a lot of the guys, like all these tackles who were at the All-Star games, the Shrine Bowl, the Senior Bowl, they got measurements taken there. And then they did measurements at the combine, and they didn't match. A lot of these guys, I think I saw something on Twitter, the average offensive tackle saw their arm length shrink by like an average of like half an inch between the All-Star weekend and the combine. And so, you know, there's discrepancy in those numbers, but the numbers we got at the combine were not great for arm length. I mean, basically all the guys at the top of the class were under 34 inches in arm length. And that may not mean much to a lot of people, but you got to think about this. In Andy Reid's time in Kansas City, he's never drafted an offensive tackle with less than 34-inch arm length. And right now, none of these top tackle prospects meet that 34-inch threshold. All these guys are 33 inches, you know, somewhere in the mid 33 inches or less. I mean, the top rated tackle in this class, Will Campbell from LSU, he's about 32 and a half. And so a lot of people think he's going to have to move inside to guard. Like, that discrepancy is pretty big. And it kind of leads me to believe what I already thought going into the combine, which is that none of these guys are probably going to get drafted by the Chiefs. And I think even more so now, it confirms that.
So based on what you saw at the combine, you talk about the tackle position. Where do you anticipate the Chiefs going at 31? Because you talked about the interior of the defensive line had a really good day. Running back had a good day. In a perfect world, what prospect or prospects on the board at a particular position would you love to see the Chiefs land on at 31?
I think we're still, I'm still interested in to see what these guys do at their pro days, but right now I think defensive tackle is the ideal position to go at 31. I think of the positions that you can actually fill adequately, it's your biggest need. And I think that if you can, I mean, you know, let's say that like someone like Nick Scorton falls, and Nick Scorton's an edge rusher, but I think he can play both inside and outside. He's like 6'4", 280, 285 pounds, which is the size of a good three technique defensive tackle. So, you know, there's some value in getting him if he starts to fall, which it looks like he might be. I think if something were to happen with Walter Nolan from Mississippi or Derek Harmon from Oregon, that'd be nice if they could scoop one of those two guys up there. But I don't really think they should reach for that position. So, I mean, really, I'm not really a fan of running back at 31. I think you can go get a really good running back at, you know, in the second round or early in the third round. But I definitely think your priority should be, you know, if there's a guy that you have a first-round grade on at defensive tackle, like a Harmon, you know, like a Nolan, like a Scorton, you know, something happens and Shamar Stewart somehow falls, I think you go and get one of those guys.
Last question I've got for you, Chris, and it's a conversation that is increasing on social media, and it's a conversation that I have heard asked over and over again. Luther Burden is falling down draft boards, and he put together a pretty decent day. His measurables kind of lined up with what everybody thought going into the combine in Indianapolis. What do the Chiefs do if they're sitting there at 31 and Luther Burden, the product out of the St. Louis area who goes to Mizzou, is still sitting on the draft board? Do the Chiefs go with him at 31, or do they go with an area of need? And what is the reaction if that's the case?
I think it'll be split. I think there's some people that will be mad at the pick because, you know, they're like, oh, we don't need wide receiver. And then there's some people that are going to be ecstatic about it. I personally would be ecstatic with it. Of the pure wide receivers, I know that there's some talk about like Travis Hunter as a wide receiver or a corner. If he were to actually play a wide receiver, I think he's the best in the draft class. But let's say that he's not. Let's say he ends up being a corner. Tedderall McMillan. And then I know there's the debate, you know, Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State or Luther Burden from Mizzou. I think Luther Burden is the second best receiver in this class if you take Travis Hunter out of the equation. And I think if the Chiefs are able to get him at 31, I think they – I don't think Andy and Veach was they would waste no time getting that pick out. They would make sure they take advantage of that and go grab him, because Burton, I think, is a special talent. I think he is someone that and I know, like, the philosophy, we don't need a receiver. But I also think whenever you are trying to build the kind, continue the kind of dynasty that the Chiefs are still in the midst of, you go out and you draft players like Burton who fall to you that are better than where they fall to. That's what happened with McDuffie. He should not have been available where they picked him. Karloftis should not have been available where they picked him. They still went and got those guys. And I think if Burton's sitting there at 31, which he shouldn't be at, I think you go grab him with the quickness, and now you're boasting maybe in a year or two, you're talking about one of, if not the best receiving core in football. I think you're setting yourself up for a great future on your offense if you can get Luther Burton at 31.
I think by all intents and purposes, it sets up like the Chiefs have options at their disposal, no question about it, in a multitude of different positions if they can make it work. Chris, appreciate you taking the time here tonight, my man. Go out, have a good night, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Yeah, you have a good rest of your week too, man.
All right, appreciate it. That is Chris Unocero joining us. He is a producer here at 96.5. He's also a host of the Character Concerns podcast that we have here through our Odyssey network of stations. You can find that on the Odyssey app, or you can go to wherever you get your podcasts. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a break, come back, react a little bit to what Chris was saying, read a few of your messages here on the program tonight as we get set for another couple of hours of the program here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Big thank you to Chris Unocero for joining us just now, talking NFL draft and NFL combine. A lot to react to based on his comments there. Interesting that, you know, he doesn't see, I mean, in fact, he may be less enthused by the offensive tackle group in this draft class. He mentioned the arm length as a bit of a concern, right? Nobody had 34 and a quarter inch arms or anything. Everybody was below that number, which is typically what you want to see from big time tackles in the National Football League. Not that, I mean, guys can have short arms and still be tremendous, but you see what happens when guys have shorter arms at that spot, right? Look at what the Philadelphia Eagles defensive line was able to do against Joe Tooney in the Super Bowl because he just didn't have the arm length to get hands on and lock himself out and keep control against defensive ends. And edge rushers nowadays are becoming so incredibly athletic and talented that you got to find advantages where you can, and arm length is one of those marked advantages that a tackle or an edge protector can have. And this draft class, I mean, certain guys had pretty remarkable measurable and explosive days. Armon Membo from Mizzou had a really, really impressive combine performance. Josh Connerly out of Oregon had a good day. At big bodied guys, 320, 330 pounds, but the arm length was a bit of a concern for him. I agree with him completely on the Omarion Hampton take that he had at the start of the interview. I was mesmerized watching Omarion Hampton. When I turned on the TV and I was watching guys run the 40, as good as like Bashul Tutton from Virginia Tech ran that 4.3 with four, whatever it was crazy, lightning fast. Omarion Hampton at 6 foot 225, massive tree trunks of legs running a 4.4. I was bought in. Like, I watched his tape and I'm like, he looks every bit the part of a three down back, but to sit and watch him run the 40 and see just how stout he is in his lower body, he looked a little bit like Saquon. I'm not saying he's going to be Saquon. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's going to be Saquon, but he looked like that in a lot of respects. So I was increasingly intrigued by that. And I thought it was interesting what he said there at the end, talking about Luther Burden, and that if he's there at 31, he would be ecstatic if the Chiefs took him. And I find it interesting. I'm not one of those who would be overly thrilled by it because I think the Chiefs have other areas of need that they have to get figured out. I think you can figure out running back a little bit later on in this draft for sure. I would agree with that sentiment. But I think the interior of the defensive line has to get solved. I think that left tackle at 31 doesn't make any sense, so I would be fine if they strayed away from that. But you could go get a corner at 31. I think that's a possibility. But again, I think it's an interesting philosophy, right? This Chiefs team does have areas of need, but the Chiefs are much closer to a best player available in terms of their draft philosophy than not. And a player as talented as Luther Burden, if he's available at 31, I think that you have enough leeway within your positional needs to look at, okay, let's go with best player available here rather than looking at positional need because we don't want to reach for a position need. I think they did a little bit of that with Kingsley Suamataia last year. It appears they did some of that 2 years ago when they went after Felix Anudike Uzama. So maybe early on, rounds two through seven, okay, let's look at positional need. But in round one, if you can go with a best player available thing, and if Luther Burden is there at 31 as a best player available, okay, I guess I can't see why not. 913-586-7965. JT, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I would be stunned if Luther is still there. I still don't understand why he keeps falling. I get he had what, quote unquote, a down year compared to what he had in 2023. But what you saw him do on the sample size of statistics, if you actually look it up, he was better at most of the stuff that you didn't see in 2024. His drop rate was down. His quarterback kind of took a downhill. I wouldn't say Brady Cook was bad by means, but it wasn't the greatest Brady Cook season compared to 2023. So when I see people saying he's not good and I've seen other wide receivers taken before him, I was like, that doesn't fit. So if he's there at 31, I would take him just because it would fit the best position available. With the offensive tackles, I totally agree. I was mesmerized by some of the big boys running, but with those guys doing that, I think most of them are going to be gone by 15. But yeah. It's not deep enough where you can say, oh, they're going to keep falling. They're not going to fall this year because of how low depth it is.
Right. And when you look at a guy like Armon Membo, who may have been around at 31, if you're the Chiefs, prior to the start of this draft, after the combine, he's in top 10 of mock drafts now after the performance he put.
I saw most of them like either top 10 or the lowest is top 15.
Yeah, now. I saw him going 9th overall and 10th overall in the two drafts, mock drafts I looked at yesterday, courtesy. One was CBS Sports, the other was NBC, I want to say, or maybe it was Pro Football Focus. So even a guy like that, and then you look at, okay, like Josh Connerly could be there at 31, but Connerly feels like a reach at 31. It's going to be fascinating to see. Again, 913-586-7965 is our number. What would you do as a Chiefs fan? What would you hope for the Chiefs if Luther Burden is there at 31? Should they take him? Should they not? And tell us who some of the guys that impressed you were at the combine. Send us those messages here. We'll react to them on the other side of the break here. After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside my producer for tonight, JT Noah, with you till 9 o'clock tonight. It's your home for Kansas City sports.